Well, you may not be talking about Syria now as much as you were a week ago. If you're not, says Rama Kudemi, you should be. And if you are, there are some things you shouldn't do. Rama Kudemi is a Syrian-American activist in Washington, D.C. She is currently on staff of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. A few weeks ago, she published an article on the blog Mondo Weiss entitled Do's and Don'ts for Progressive Activists Discussing Syria. I spoke with Rama yesterday and asked her why she felt the need to write this piece.
As someone who is part of, you know, I consider myself part of the anti-war movement in this country, part of, you know, the progressive movement in this country, I'd been sitting the past 2 years and really feeling frustrated with activists in the United States who kind of seem to not really take up Syria as an issue. And I knew, I had a sense that once President Obama was going to really push for a war on Syria, that we're going to get all these activists really riled up and taking to the streets and starting to do activism around Syria. And all it was going to be is focused on the U.S. military strikes without any sort of context to what's been going on in the past 2.5 years, without any recognition that we, as an anti-war movement, as a lot of activists who consider ourselves in solidarity with people who we want to stop U.S. attacks against, need to really sit and listen to those voices and recognize those voices and interact with these people that we're supposedly saving from U.S. bombs. And so when the rhetoric really started gaining ground that this is going to be the next Iraq, this is just a huge U.S. imperial project, I knew it was really important to really make sure that Syria was studied and analyzed as Syria, just like any country and people deserve to be. They deserve to be interacted with as their own unique positions versus what we want to think about, you know, being, oh, it's just empire versus everyone else.
So what are some of the don'ts?
I mean, the first big don't was this idea of both sides and there's a civil war and the United States should not be getting involved. There's a clear oppressor and there's a clear oppressed in this situation. Yes, of course, it is more complicated when you get into more details, but in general, this is a regime that back in March 2011, when the Syrian people took to the streets and demanded reforms, were attacked through tanks, through missiles, and killed, you know, hundreds on end. When people demanded that the regime fall, just like they were demanding in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, in Bahrain, the regime answered again back, more violence. Now they were using jets. Now they're using chemical weapons. This is a regime that has been oppressing its people for several decades. This is a regime that is in the wrong. Everything that has been happened, you know, the past 2.5 years, the 110,000 people that have been killed, the buck stops at the regime and their inability to recognize the Syrian people's desires for justice and freedom from oppression.
And what are some of the things that you do want people to be doing on the left?
It's very important that people do continue. It's almost been a month since Obama declared that we have to respond, we have to punish the regime. I think it is important that U.S. anti-war activists stand up and say, no, the answer is not U.S. bombs. We don't stop mass killing of people by dropping bombs on them. What we can do is point out how the United States can actually help the situation. Even Obama and Karen Hagel all say there is no military solution. In the end, it has to be a political solution. So what does that political solution look like? We need to be pushing the United States to engage the regime's backers. The regime is able to survive for this long because Russia continues to send weapons to the regime, because Iran is providing them with funding and support. And so these are the two players that the United States can exert some sort of pressure on in order to make sure that the regime is in the end able to fall and the people are able to get their freedom from it. It's also very important to look at, you know, the hypocrisy that the United States is sitting there and preaching about the need to, how dare Russia back this horrific regime, and then we as the United States back regimes such as Bahrain, such as Egypt. We continue the $3 billion plus dollars a year that we send to Israel as it continues the oppression of Palestinians. We need to really be pointing that out to people and say, this is why it's really ridiculous that the United States thinks it has a moral ground to go ahead and bomb people in order to save them from, you know, other bombing, from other people bombing. It's also very important, I think, to highlight what the Syrian people continue to do day in and day out. We know media loves violence. Thus, that's what the media is always going to be covering. Yet the Syrian people, for now 2.5 years, continue to go out and protest peacefully. There's a lot of different creative, nonviolent actions that take place, from chanting to singing, cartoons that are made, videos that are made. All of this stuff is being continues to go on despite all the violence and the horrificness. And so it's very important for us as activists in the United States to recognize that and give voice to these Syrian peoples who are not just sitting back and saying, okay, we quit, we're going to go home, but no, rising up still against the regime and against the extremist armed opposition groups and telling them we're not replacing one dictatorial authoritarian regime with another.
I heard someone say on the radio last week that there really is no civil opposition at this point because the militarization on both sides is so intense that whatever sort of non-affiliated opposition groups there were have faded away. But it seems like you're saying that's not true.
No, that's completely not true. And again, in what is called the liberated areas of Syria, so these are now parts where the armed opposition groups, again, there's different various groups, but have taken control in these groups. So these are parts of Syria near Aleppo, in the northern part of the country, where, like I said, people are refusing to just be like, okay, well, yay, we were liberated from the regime, we should celebrate, whoever comes next we're okay with. No, they're saying, absolutely not. We're going to continue to fight for our freedom, even if you're claiming that you're fighting against the regime, we don't want you to oppress us just because you're claiming you're fighting the regime. And there's hundreds of pictures that are always uploaded, videos, chants, anyone. It's a shame that people would claim that there's no such thing as a nonviolent resistance, civil resistance, just because the violence has taken over. No, the violence has taken over because that's what the media and the international community is paying attention to.
How do you feel about some of the claims that have been made that it was really one of the rebel groups who committed the chemical weapons attack, or potentially that it was an accident involving chemical weapons that were supplied to one of the groups by the Saudis?
First of all, I mean, Human Rights Watch and the UN seem to be coming up with reports that make very clear that the regime is the one responsible. And even if we look at some of the, you know, evidence that has been presented so far, the Russians, for example, when videos first broke out of the attack on August 21st, the attack happened late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, and the Russians were saying, oh, this is our fake videos. And why are they fake videos, they were claiming? Well, the videos were uploaded based, you know, and the timing of the videos was on a Wednesday night, so before the alleged attacks happened. When it was pointed out to the Russians that actually the videos are time-stamped based on California time, because that is YouTube's standard, all of a sudden the story changed. Oh, okay, yeah, the attack did happen, but it was the rebels that did it. The official Syrian story that was claimed earlier this week, so they waited 2 weeks before they actually made any claims about the attacks. Buthaina Shaban, who's this government spokeswoman, was like, oh, the rebels and Al-Qaeda, because that's now their wonderful claim of, like, just like all governments want to justify their actions. They claim terrorism. That's what they're fighting, terrorism. They're like, well, the Al-Qaeda took children and adults from all the way in Latakia, brought them down and gassed them in Ghouta. Just a ridiculous claim. If the rebels or Al-Qaeda wanted to gas people, they'll just gas people in Ghouta, where it is itself. Why would they bring people all the way from one part of the country, bring them down all the way another? And the reason why Buthaina Shaban was making this claim is because she wanted to make it a very sectarian issue. The people who are in Latakia, where she was claiming these civilians came from, are Latakia is an Alawite city. And the people in Ghouta are Sunni. So she wanted to claim that the Al-Qaeda would not kill Sunnis, but they'd kill Alawites. So that's why they brought. So these claims are just absolutely ridiculous. It's been documented that that it was missiles that brought about that were used to release these chemical weapons. There's been no claim whatsoever that rebels or al-Qaeda have been using, you know, missiles in Syria. That's very much a regime thing. I think we have to be very careful, again, in the anti-war movement, over-conflating Iraq with Syria. These are two completely different situations. Iraq, we know, the neocons came into office and had already made the decision they were going to war with Iraq, no matter what. In Syria, you cannot take away the people's agency and them rising up in 2011 and saying, we no longer want to live with this regime, live in fear. And it's really sad when progressive leftist so-called solidarity activists in the United States want to take away agency from the people in order to fit the situation in Syria in their story of U.S. imperialism versus everyone else.
What sources would you recommend people turn to for good information about Syria?
I think one good source, Jadalia, is an online source that has published a lot of different voices in and out about Syria from Syrians themselves. Max Blumenthal just actually recently came back from the Za'atari refugee camp and has some very devastating information from the camp and how the people are feeling there. And it's very important to also realize that Syrians on the issue of U.S. strikes are very much divided on this. And it's, you know, there are Syrians who are absolutely against strikes for various reasons, and then there are Syrians who want the strikes for various reasons. And many of the refugees that I've heard interviewed say, just strike and get rid of this man already, you know, the desperation in their voices. I'm not saying this to make people stop organizing against U.S. strikes. I still believe that is our responsibility in the United States to make sure that the U.S. does not do more harm than it's already been done. But you have to give voice and you have to listen to those voices and say and try to understand why they're thinking this way. It's shameful that it's taken 2.5 years for the anti-war community in this country to wake up and see what's happening in Syria. And I think it's going to be even more shameful if once this latest threats of U.S. strikes subsides, which seems to be that it is going to subside, and you know, the U.S. is not actually going to take any military action, that Syria goes back in the background and no one's going to care and no one's going to organize for the need for the humanitarian aid of 2 million refugees. No one's going to be pushing the United States to really bring about a political situation. And the only time we're going to hear about Syria again is the next time there's some sort of heinous massacre and the U.S. is again threatening some sort of military action. We need to make sure that we use this new attention on Syria to really push to end the suffering of the Syrian people. I think it's also important to use this opportunity because, you know, in the end of the day, the U.S. has very little direct leverage on Syria. This is one regime in the Middle East that the U.S. is not 100% backing and supporting. But the United States does have control over other regimes, like we mentioned. In Bahrain, there's been an uprising now that's been happening for over 2 years that's been completely malign, you know, no attention whatsoever in the media. In Egypt, we had the recent coup that, you know, the United States chose not to label it as a coup so it can continue sending military aid to the Egyptian army. In Israel, again, the strongest evidence of U.S. hypocrisy in the region of continuing to fund and support and back Israel's occupation and Israel's apartheid policies against Palestinians. So we as activists should use this opportunity with Syria and the horrific and people learning about what's happening in Syria and thinking, oh, my God, why can't the United States do anything to help, to point out, well, maybe there's nothing direct the United States can do to help the Syrian people, especially now that it's been 2.5 years into the situation. But there's a lot of ways the United States already intervenes in the region that is wrong and that we need to stop that kind of intervention.
Rama Kudemi is a Syrian-American activist and writer and membership and outreach coordinator for the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Her article, Do's and Don'ts for Progressives Discussing Syria, appeared on Mondo Weiss on August 27th.